From downtown, this is Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam, and you're listening to Nintendo Main Podcast. Boom shakalaka!
This week on Nintendo Main, happy late Mario Day, and not happy RIP Akira Toriyama.
Yeah, I guess humanity needed a character redesign, so he got called to the home base. We're all going to look like Goku soon.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Welcome to Nintendo Main Podcast, episode 413, your place to hear Nintendo fans celebrate the little bit of Mario, of Mar-10 that we had, and mourn incredible designers and all that. And we are your hosts. I'm Trey, half step and grind Johnson.
I'm Jeremy, new Game Plus Mikowski.
And yeah, here we are.
John is on a mission.
John was unavailable tonight. Probably my schedule has been crazy. I've kind of been all over the place. Like literally, I've been from one place to another. So actually, I haven't played a whole lot of things because I haven't really had a whole lot of time to play anything. But we'll talk about it regardless. But why don't we just start with Mar-10 with Mario Day, just for the fun of it. Mar-10 happened on Sunday, which was also the Oscars day. You can listen to Jess and I talk about that on this feed and on the How Is It Now feed. I hope I wasn't.
So is it the 10th one you've done?
It is the 10th one, actually. It's our number 10, and also it was on March 10th. It was on Mar-10. I hope I wasn't too annoying, because I did get a little drunk and probably talked about Poor Things for much longer than I should have, but it was a great movie. Go see it. It's awesome. It's on Hulu.
Is that the Emma Stone movie?
Yeah, it's on Hulu now. Actually, it was my favorite movie of all the nominated movies.
Of all time?
Of all the nominated movies for the Oscars. All the best picture nominations. Poor Things was my favorite out of all those. I thought it was done really well. And it's like a Frankenstein monster movie, and you know how I feel about those movies. So it was really, really spoke to me. But Mar-10, it was like a two minute direct, pretty much a direct mini. I watched it with the sound off, you know, because I was just trying to get through it really quickly, and then I watched it later with the sound on. But I mean, I'm sure we were so excited to hear that the Mario movie is getting a sequel. I mean, surprise, it's getting a sequel.
There definitely seemed to be some sort of thing Nintendo was doing with their social media where they were counting down to Mar-10 as of like a few days before. So, yeah, we were expecting some sort of announcement, but not really. Was not exactly blown away by this one, I got to say.
Well, the evil penguin, some people call them Pioro, who actually like following because I think they're funny. But on Twitter, Pioro did say that there would be an announcement about that. Well, basically there we would see something about Paper Mario Thousand Year Door and Luigi's Mansion 2, which makes sense. And I wanted to see stuff of that. So cool. So yeah, we got Miyamoto showed up, talked about the Mario movie, the Illumination guy was on there, talked about
every time he says that he's gonna talk to Chris Son, I always worry it's gonna be Chris Pratt. No, it's different Chris. Yeah, it's Chris, the Illumination Chris.
Yeah, the main Illumination Chris guy. Talked to him or them, whatever. Yeah, and they're like, we're bringing back the Mario movie into the theaters in April. And I'm like, does anybody want this? It's like on Netflix. You can just watch it from, I don't know. Like, why not? Make some more money. There's no first-party Nintendo games coming out in April. So I guess that's what we got for that month is Mario again in the theater. So whatever.
Ever since the pandemic, it's kind of like seems like that's how movies work. They're like, let's just throw it back in there a bit and see what happens.
Well, a lot of them were like anniversaries and stuff. Like I know they threw what was it? They threw like episode one back at like the 25th anniversary. I remember that. I think three's going up too, like the Star Wars, the Revenge of the Sith is going to the theaters again at some point, but whatever. Yeah. Mario. Yeah. And 2026 for Mario 2. I mean, I really do not care at all about seeing a sequel to that movie, but I guess we'll have to for this show, but I really don't care if they, the other one was so disappointing that I just,
yeah. It's not like we needed anyone to be like, hey, there's going to be more Mario movies. Like we already knew they made a shit ton of money off of it. And, why not just keep doing that? Why not just keep making money?
Exactly.
So who cares? I mean, obviously a lot of people do, but as a podcast, we'll talk about it and stuff, but it's just, we were pretty lukewarm on the movie, you know, the first Mario movie. So what is this one going to be like the Bravely Default 2? That's just like an amazing sequel or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Or like, what is it? Or like Assassin's Creed 2, because Assassin's Creed 1 got really bad reviews, and then 2 was like, oh my God, it's the best. I played it. I didn't think it was very good, but a lot of people did think it was good. But I don't know. We'll have to see.
I mean, consider the first movie a gigantic test audience that they had, so maybe the second one will, they'll literally be listening to everybody's gripes. And But as far as I know, Chris Pratt's still in it, so they aren't listening to that.
I think, well, I mean, Chris Pratt was the least bad thing about it. I think for me, it was that was definitely the least bad part of it. I think the real bad thing was the writing and, you know, turning everything up to 11, the like speed run of the story, where it's just like to the next thing, to the next thing, the next thing, and like no chemistry whatsoever between the characters. But that's another episode. We've already talked about that. But the cool thing about Mario 10 or Mar 10, Mario Day, was release dates for Thousand Year Door and Luigi's Mansion 2, which are coming out in May and June. So,
wow.
So we got Princess Peach, Showtime, whatever, in March. And then we got, at the beginning of May, we have Endless Ocean. And then towards the end, it's May 23rd for Thousand Year Door, which is a couple days away from my birthday. So that's cool. It's my birthday game.
Nice.
And then, Luigi's Mansion's like June 27th or something like that. It's like towards the end of June also. So, hooray.
Anymore when I see game releases, I either think of them as pre or post marriage.
Oh, like, yeah. You won't be married. You won't be married yet.
No, this wedding's just so much planning, as you might know. So it's like, now it's getting to the point where like...
You're getting to the
wire.
It seems
almost impossible that I'm going to be doing all that stuff.
Well,
plus
it's like
video games.
Yeah, you got what, like 6 months until you get married?
Yeah, six and a half.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're at the end. Yeah, you're at the end of September. It's gonna be fun though. Luigi's Mansion coming out 6/27. They're both coming out at full price, which some people are upset about, I guess. The Thousand Year Door and Luigi's Mansion are both coming out at $60.
I mean, is that full price anymore after Breath of the Wild 2 was $70, you know?
Yeah, but that's the only discount. That's the only Nintendo game that's been $70. Everything else has been $60. So I do think, I mean, I saw people like some people being kind of upset about Luigi's Mansion 2 being $60. When I bought Jess a 3DS, I actually bought them Luigi's Mansion for $20. It was a Nintendo Select. So it's like, we'll see how much they're adding to it.
That was when I bought my 3DS on eBay, the first one that I bought, it came with Dark Moon, and I still haven't finished it.
I bought Dark Moon on the day, I think I probably got it midnight release or whatever when it came out, but I did beat it all the way, and I'm excited.
I really liked 3, so.
Yeah, I'm excited to play it again. It's different. I mean, 3 is definitely better than 2, but I did like 2 because... You know, 1 was so short, but 2 had the different mansions where you had these different places that you went to, which is pretty cool. So, I don't know. Hopefully they add something extra to it, but it is, I don't know. I've seen people online being upset about it because it's like, it was a $40 game on 3DS and now it's $60. And it's like, what's extra on there? Well, there'll be something.
Yeah, Gooigi, I hope.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of comparison stuff on Thousand Year Door. Like, there's some stuff that looks different, but... I just want to play that game again. Like, the only version I have is scratched and I can't play it. And it's an expensive game, so it's like, you know, it's worth it for $60. But I'll do the Nintendo voucher. I'll get them both for $50. Is my plan. Unless I might. Well, we'll see. I'm kind of waiting. You know, Princess Peach comes out next week, and we'll talk about my impressions of the demo as well. But I'm still waiting on a review on that one. I want to see what people end up saying about it as to whether I buy it on the day or not, because it's going to be out a week from tomorrow. So it's pretty much, it's like right on the cusp. But the big thing that I thought was really, really cool, and John would have thought was really cool if he was here, and you as well, I'm sure. Everybody thought it was cool. In addition to the Game Boy app on the Nintendo Switch Online, for me, the main one was Mario Golf, the Game Boy Color Mario Golf, which is very, very good. I've actually been playing that a lot. I actually fell asleep playing it last night, but you know, a lot of people think about, you know, Mario Golf Advance on Game Boy Advance or whatever. This was the first one. This was the first one that had the RPG mechanics. It's just as good, if not better, than the Game Boy Advance one. And you still can't do it, but in the original one, you could take your characters from the Game Boy Color and put them on the 64 game, and you could play them on there. I guess you could do the same thing with the Game Boy Advance connector on Toadstool Tour. But yeah, Game Boy Color Mario Golf is really, really good. I played the shit out of it on 3DS on Virtual Console, and I played it all the way to the end. And I've already put some hours into it because it's a really, really good game. So get on that shit. It's free if you got Nintendo Switch Online. High recommendation.
I did play
on that one.
I played a little bit of it. I think it's, yeah. It definitely has the same feel so far of the one I have played multiple times.
It's pretty much the same game. It's just for Game Boy Color and not Advance.
Yeah.
It's very similar. I mean, we have like, you know, when you line up, when you're like starting the golf courses, it kind of has that same map, you know, where you kind of like walk around the side and like when you register yourself or whatever, it's very similar to that one. But I had a blast.
You
got to
customize your clubs and stuff like that. Like,
You can, when you level up, you get to customize your, you know, you can like, you can hit farther, you can like bring back your, you know, like your, you know, where, how far it goes to the right or left, or there's like four or five different things that you can customize, like as you, when you level up and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I jumped right into the single player thing, and I've been playing that. But I guess we can transition from there to what we've been playing, what we got, and what we've been playing for the week. I've been like I said, I've been very busy, so I have not had a whole lot of time to play things. But I did play Mario Golf. It ended up coming out on the 11th, as it normally does. And it said the 12th, but it came out on the 11th. So I was on an out of town thing. I drove down Monday night, and I saw it was available on Monday, and I was like, oh, cool. But I was also editing the other podcast, which the Oscar one is more complicated. I can't really play games and do that at the same time. But I did play it. I played it a little bit, and yeah, it's still a great game. I got through like the first two courses on the tournament mode. Oh, and so if anybody remembers, way back the first time I went to Des Moines, first time I ever worked in Des Moines, I had a weird TV at the hotel where. So there's like a cable box that's hooked onto the back of the TV. And if you want to like plug in your system or whatever, you have to hook it into the cable box, because if you try to hook it onto the other HDMIs on the TV, it doesn't work. So when you hook it into the cable box, there's a huge delay from when you're trying to play the game. It works the same way if you try to play things off of your laptop, because I watched Dynamite on there last night, and there was like, no joke, like a 5 second, like... There was basically a 5 second delay on audio after the picture. So you watch them doing the wrestling, and they throw them on the mat, and then like 5 seconds later, it's like, toon, and then you hear the mat. I was like, wow, okay, this is bad. So I was playing Mario Golf a little bit on the handheld, and I put it on the TV, and I was laying in bed playing on the TV, and I'm like, why am I so bad at this? Like, this, why is this not working? So I'm hitting the A button, and it's like stopping the meter like way after I hit the A button. I'm like, I played this game on 3DS. It was never this bad before, but yeah, it was really, really bad on the TV, and I was doing terrible. And I'm like, what the fuck? So then I tried Mario Land 2, and I was like, well, this feels weird too. And then I tried another game that we got as well. I tried Empty Shell, which we got codes. We got codes from Hyperstrange from Voitech. Thank you so much for that. But I didn't get to play much of it. I didn't get to play much of it because it was so fucked up through the TV. Like the delay was so bad that I was like, all right, there's got to be something wrong with this. So it's really weird. So you try to plug it into the cable box and it has this crazy delay. If you unplug the cable box and you plug your Switch into where the cable box is plugged in, it pumps up the audio to 100%, and you can't turn it down unless you have a remote that you can coordinate to your TV. So you need like a universal remote to turn it down, because the remote that is included in your room is for the cable box and not the TV. This is the same thing that happened to me when I was in Des Moines. Like when first time I went there, when I got the Kirby game, you know, the Forgotten Land, it was the same sort of thing where it's like really laggy, but if I turn it to the TV, it was really fucking loud. It's so weird, but I guess it's a thing that's at some hotels. So I haven't been able to play any game on the TV because it's all been all fucked up. And I just haven't had time to pro, because I do have a universal remote that I bring with me just in case I can't like switch the channels to the input or whatever. And I haven't had time to program it, but yeah, it's been crazy. So I've been, I was waiting for Star Wars Battlefront Collection to come out, and I was watching Dynamite, and I was just playing Mario Golf while I was doing all those things to wait for it. And when I played it on handheld, on the Switch, I was like, oh, okay, this is, and I did so much better. And I ended up pulling myself out of the gutter because I was like +4 or whatever. And I ended up like ending with like -5 because I needed to actually play it without the delay. And I'm like, oh wait, no, I am good at this game. This TV was just fucking me over. So it was really, it was just killing me. So, yeah, that's what happened with that. But, what else? I played the Princess Peach demo.
Ah, you finally got to play that.
Yeah, I did. I played it after, I think it was like after we recorded last week. So there's only two things in there. There's just the sword fighter and there's the patisserie or whatever. There's the baker, as I call it. It's basically like,
yeah.
So my impression from it was basically like the sword fighter feels like a really, 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 really dumbed down version of Ease is what it feels like. It's very, very dumbed down Ease.
Everything's Ease to you.
Well, I mean, it's like, it is a lot like Ease. Well, you know, cause you can do the, like, you can do the, what did you call it? Witch Time. It was called Witch Time in a Bayonetta, but you can do the same thing in the Ease games and the later ones where you dodge at the right time and you get to slow down.
Yeah.
It does that as well, but it's like two buttons, you know, it's basically like the button to attack and your dodge button are the same button. So it's like you just keep spamming the B or whatever and you'll end up doing the Witch Time dodge or whatever. Yeah, it reminded me of like a very, very easy Ease is what I got from it. I actually like the baking one better because it kind of felt like a Mario Party game. So you basically like tap A to put a bunch of dough into a pan and you need to get it to a certain amount. And it's like, how high can you get it, but don't make it too high? And then you make a whole bunch of different desserts and you have to put them on a cart that goes to a thing and you have to like get as many as you can in this certain amount of time. And it totally felt like a Mario Party game to me. So I was like, well, this is kind of cool. You know, I like that better than the sword.
It's like a dumbed down overcooked or something.
Yeah, well, minus all the stress. But it was still a little stressful. Like I didn't hit the level to get all of the little star things that you get, you know, like because you need to get to a certain point to get all of them, and I only got one of them. So there is like, you know, there's definitely a lot of extra stuff to collect, but you were right. Like it does really like the frame rate really chugs a lot on there. It feels like it's kind of struggling to survive on this current Switch. So hopefully the non-demo version performs better because it did feel a little bit like framey.
Yeah, it's a pretty game. I'm not super impressed so far with the actual gameplay. Maybe I'm not the target audience. That's okay. But it was still fun for what it's worth, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, for what it's worth, I mean, we got the demo for free, so it was worth a lot. We didn't have to pay anything for it. Like I said, I'm waiting on a review. I want to see what people end up saying about it. Because I'm kind of on the fence. Like I was like, oh, it looks kind of cool. Like the presentation's cool, but it's like, how much depth do we have with the different suits that you change into and all that? So we will see. We'll see next week.
I think it would be amazing if like the Peach game that we finally get, you know, besides the emotion one, we finally get our Peach game and it was just like the hardest of the hard. It was just the hardest Mario game ever, you know, in that universe. I would love that.
I mean, I don't want
like
that.
The Dark
I don't think
the Peach Souls.
I mean, you know, I don't think that games need to be overly hard to be fun or whatever. I'm not in that camp. I like Kirby games, but Kirby games are actually fun.
I'm starting to like it.
I like Kirby games, but Kirby games are actually hard if you played one past the Game Boy one. Like Kirby in the Forgotten Land is hard as fuck. once you get towards the end there, it is super hard. I ended up quitting because it was too hard. If you play the post game shit, it is a hard ass game, like 100%.
I believe it.
And all the Kirby games are like that. But I mean, I don't give a shit whether this, you know, I'm not like, oh my God, I need this game to be so difficult because that's how I find enjoyment in life or whatever. But I don't know. I just want to know if there's enough to play, I guess, from it, because it still kind of feels like a dumbed down Kirby game, because, you know, you can say whatever about Kirby, but the Super Nintendo Kirby games, the things that you know, the different things you turn into, the controls were much more complicated than what Peach is. You know, it was basically like playing as a Smash Brothers character, because it had like the up and B and the down and B and the regular B on like the original Kirby Superstar. It had all that. So this isn't even really there. It's just like two buttons, but not, you know, but just they both do one thing. So it's not even as complicated as some Kirby games. So.
I know.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was some kind of combo element or, you know, something to make it different. But yeah, it just feels very Twitch based, which is okay, I guess. But yeah, you're very right that it has a very Kirby feel, like when you have the Sword Knights power up or whatever.
Well, it has a Kirby feel, but it's not as doesn't have as much depth as Kirby even has. That's what I'm saying.
Well, no,
you know, because HAL Laboratory,
not so far, at least.
Pre-Smash Brothers, the Kirby powers controlled like Smash Brothers characters before that ever existed. So it's like it's not even there, you know.
It's true.
Like this, yeah. All the shit you could do in Superstar was like, oh shit, yeah, this has a lot of depth to it. But we'll see. I don't know. Like I said, I'm on the fence about it. But yeah, what else do I have? Oh yeah, Ease 1. I was playing Ease 1 while I was editing, and actually got farther. I haven't talked to anybody. I haven't done anything in the story. I've just been leveling up. I've just been walking around, and that's what I was saying, half step and grind. I listened to that. I listened to the Retronauts podcast about Ease 1 through 3, and I was like, when I heard that, I was like, oh yeah, the half step. I should try that. So I got on there. And I started doing that. So the half step is, I'm sure you listen to it, right? It's like
you don't align perfectly, right?
Yeah. Like, so, which is actually pretty cool for the time that it came out. So, yeah, on Ease 1, if you walk directly into the character will fall and attack you from the front. And there's a good chance you'll die if you're not leveled up or not, or if you don't have a shield. So you have to attack from the back, or you have to do half step, which is like, you know, where they're here and you're over here. So like half of your sprite and half of their sprite, they meet on that one spot, and that's how you do it. And I was playing the game like that, and I ended up leveling up like 2 or 3 times, and I bought all the regular equipment, like the beginner sword and the beginner armor and the beginner shield, like that sort of thing. And I've got to the point where I can just run over the guys and they don't hurt me. I can even do it from the straight front and they won't hurt me. But I haven't done any story things, because you have to talk to people in town to do the story things. And all of the story stuff is all in Japanese, right? And I have to translate it through Google Translate or whatever. And I just didn't have time for that, because I was editing and I'm just running around and just leveling up. So that's all I've really done with Ease 1. But Ease 2 is now available as well. Same thing. Egg Console is the NC88 or whatever it's called. Like it's on there now, Ease 2. So I'll wait to see if I beat 1. But I need to, like, you know, you have to talk to people, I guess, to do actual things in the game. So I got to do all the translating and all that. But it's pretty fun for what it is. And after I'd played it for a while, I went, because in the game, it's like how to play Ease. And there's like a couple paragraphs you can read and it'll explain things. And it does actually explain the half step. Like I didn't have to listen to the podcast. It's totally in the game. It tells you how to attack people and how you have to be kind of off to the side and not confront them straight on.
Yeah. It's like you're bumping shoulders with them almost. Like,
yeah. Well,
it's sort of how I understand it.
Well, it's interesting because if you're playing it with the music on, with the sound on, it actually makes different sounds depending on where you're at. So if you walk straight into them, it makes the sound of like two swords hitting each other And if you hit him on the half step, it sounds differently. Or if you attack him from behind, it sounds even differently as well, which is pretty cool. They went into all that detail. And also, whenever you equip everything, your items change. Like, you know, when you put the shield on, you see the shield, you see the sword. The sword's different colors depending on which one you're using, like that sort of thing. So it does a lot of really cool stuff for the time that it came out. So I thought it was really cool that there's a different sound depending on how you run into the person. So you know, like, whether you did it right or not. So, like, if you attack head on, it's very much like two metal things hitting each other. So you know that you didn't do it right. So it's cool. I've just been, like I said, I've just been grinding, bumping, grinding, half step and grinding, whatever.
Are you going to play through all the Ys games like you did for Dragon Quest, or like you're trying to do for Dragon Quest?
No. Well, I mean, the first Ys game I played was 8, and I beat 8, and then I beat Ys Origin, and that's the only ones I beat. But I'm pretty close on 9, and I played a lot of 7 on PSP, but I never beat it. But yeah,
I'm just saying, now that you're going back to the beginning, are you going to like go all the way up through 3, 4, 5, 6, 7?
I'd like to if they're available. I know that the remake of 3 is available in Japan, but not in America. What is it called? I don't know. I'll look it up. I can't remember it offhand. But it is.
You might be fluent in Japanese text by then.
It is available. It is available on Switch in Japan. Oath of Fel'Ghana. That's what it's called. It came to me. I didn't even have to look it up. Ys Oath of Fel'Ghana. That's a remake of 3, which you can buy on the Japanese eShop. I was hoping it would get released here. I know it uses the same engine that Ys Origin does, so it kind of has that top-down thing. But, yeah, no, I'd love to play all of them. I would love to see a re-release of 7, because 7 was really fun on PSP, and I streamed some of it on Twitch. But I would rather play it on Switch than PSP, because, you know, PSP has that little nub that's kind of hard to move around. But speaking of excellent RPGs, oh, my God, Akira Toriyama died. Well, he died on the 1st of March, but I remember seeing Nadia Oxford like a tweet about it, and I didn't catch it. I didn't understand what it was, but then I saw you put it on Slack, and I was like, oh, fuck, Akira Toriyama, holy shit. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people will mention him as Dragon Ball guy, whatever. The person that he reminds, what he means to me is Dragon Quest. Akira Toriyama was basically the Jack Kirby of video games. If you're familiar with the origin of Marvel Comics, Stan Lee was the writer. Jack Kirby was the artist. Jack Kirby was basically the one who gave you like the Fantastic Four and like all these incredible designs. Stan Lee was just basically like, here's the idea, you do it, and he drew everything. That's kind of the same thing that happened between Yuji Horii and Akira Toriyama. And I saw like something on Twitter where it's like, here, Yuji Horii was like, all right, I want slimes to be in there. So he sends him this like picture of a slime that looks like a Dungeons and Dragons slime that has like no personality to it. And Toriyama throws it back with the slime with the face and the eyes and all that. And it's like, boom, classic already. You already got this classic fucking character.
One of the best
that you're going to see on everything. I mean, we just talked on the Patreon. We just talked about a Rocket Slime, you know, just how, but that's, That was the huge thing for Toriyama for me, was just how incredible the monster design was. Like, Jess cross-stitched the golem for me, like a, you know, like the sprite of the golem. But yeah, he designed these characters so well for like, you know, for 8-bit stuff. But then like continued on even for the later things, they still looked really good in 3D, and it was just like, yeah. And supposedly people were saying that even like, what was it, Dr. Slump? Like one of the characters from Dr. Slump was an inspiration for the way Mario ran in Mario 3, like when he was doing that, when he had his hands out before he flew, was inspired by Toriyama even. So it goes even farther back, before Dragon Ball, before Dragon Quest. You know, it's like he did.
Say the Dragon Ball manga started in the early 80s, so.
Yeah, but I thought Dr. Slump was before that.
It must have been.
I thought Dr. Slump was one of the first ones. Yeah. I mean, don't quote me on that. That's just what I heard.
Toriyama just, I don't know. Like, I was trying to explain to Sean, and I was like, it's kind of like maybe how people felt when Walt Disney died. Like, somebody that truly defined, like, that's the closest example. But I mean, I would even say, like, Toriyama as an artist was more, because I guess Walt Disney was more of a business person at a certain point than an animator. But Toriyama is just, his signature is on so many things. Like, he really just, I don't know. It's hard to imagine a world without him and his art, and what anime looks like now probably has a lot to do with him, and like monster designs and games, and just like, yeah, it could have all been like the boring D&D stuff like you said, but instead, like, I think a lot of games where you fight monsters are probably less boring now because Dragon Quest and the character design of that. And I don't know. I mean, obviously I've been listening to some podcasts and a bunch of tributes and stuff this week, and I don't know how much my brain's been influenced by what other people have said, but I do know, going back to the very first Toriyama thing I remember is Chrono Trigger. I played that. I played shit out of that when it came out, and like, it's such an important moment in my life. When I played that, I think kind of like giving me a trajectory towards what I understanding what that I enjoyed, you know, more niche video games that I realized, and that Japan had better stuff, and we just hadn't seen it all yet. And then obviously, yeah, the character designs I remember, and Chrono Trigger just really standing out to me because I'd played through Final Fantasy 3, 6, whatever. I played through that, and just like the fact that you weren't moving like in a grid, and you were like, I don't know, the characters were so much, the sprites were so much bigger, and the dynamism of like how the game worked was great. But ultimately, it was the art that like really informed that game and made it as good as it was. And I mean, we're talking like all the way down to like the multiple endings, where I'm thinking of like meeting the developers. Like Toriyama's all over that. Like the people had picked their favorite characters as like representative of them as developers. And if you look at like a lot, I know I saw a lot of the tributes, like it showed Toriyama's like character of himself look kind of like a sniffit a little bit. It's like a guy with a gas mask, and he'd always draw his little version of himself, you know, in the back of his comics and stuff.
Yeah, I heard he was, once again, he was kind of like Jack Kirby. Like both of them were very much like kind of antisocial. They didn't really come out a whole lot for different things. While you were talking, I looked it up. So Dr. Slump started in 1980 and Dragon Ball started in 1984. So Toriyama went from Dr. Slump to Dragon Ball in 84. And this is Shonen Jump magazine. So this is the manga before any of the animation stuff. So
yeah.
So I guess because I think I'm pretty sure that that's why he was approached by Yuji Horii, was because of the Dr. Slump stuff. But I guess one of the main characters of Dr. Slump, when they run, they have their arms out like that. And that was the inspiration for how Mario runs before he flies away, was from the character from Dr. Slump.
I mean, that's totally how Goku runs, you know, as in the original Dragon Ball, like as a kid, like when he's running around. That's how he runs.
I never really watched much of Dragon Ball. It's weird. I'm sure I mentioned it before in here. So, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't really like the people that liked Dragon Ball. So it turned me off of Dragon Ball. Like it was the same thing with like South Park, right? I didn't like the people like South Park, so I didn't watch it until way later.
I mean, Rick and Morty's like that now, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, yeah, like there's that. It's like toxic fans or whatever. Well, I mean, high school was
like Family Guy, which is like,
I never liked Family Guy, though. I never thought that show was good.
But the people made it even worse.
Yeah.
The fans made it even worse.
But I mean, when I was in high school, I was picked on a lot. So like 90% of the people in high school I didn't like. But the people who like Dragon Ball, it kind of had this bad stigma because of those people that liked it. I was like, I don't like them, and they like Dragon Ball. So I remember, I mean, I got Chrono Trigger for Super Nintendo because it was highly talked about on Nintendo Power, and I loved it and all that. Went to prom with Chrono Trigger. Instead of going to prom, I stayed at home, played Chrono Trigger.
It's a good story.
Because I knew it was going to get turned down, so I played that game instead. Which I don't know who I could have gone with that would have made it better. Playing Chrono Trigger is much better. But I remember when I got my PS2, when I got my PlayStation 2 for the first time, I was trying to find a really good PlayStation 2 RPG. And I remember seeing the artwork of Dragon Quest VII and being like, oh, I don't want that. That looks like Dragon Ball Z. So I always wonder. I always wonder about what my life would have been like if I would have got, no, not 7, 8, Dragon Quest 8. I wonder what my life would have been like if I would have went for Dragon Quest 8 instead of what I got. What I ended up getting was Xenosaga, which I didn't like and I returned, which I've actually bought again because of my love for Xenoblade and all that. But yeah, I ended up getting Xenosaga. I didn't like it. I took it back. And then later, actually, when I first came around to Dragon Quest again, was listening to a Retronauts episode about Dragon Quest, and it just all of a sudden clicked in my head that Dragon Quest and Dragon Warrior were the same thing. And I had my Dragon Warrior that I got from Nintendo Power for free way back when, you know, because we actually had Nintendo Power before that, and my mom canceled it and then restarted it so we could get the free Dragon Warrior game because, you know, I wanted a free fucking game. And I was young and I was too dumb to figure out RPGs, and I remember playing Dragon Warrior. And once I put it together that Dragon Quest and Dragon Warrior were the same thing, I went back and I played my copy of Dragon Warrior that I had as a kid, and I beat it in a couple days, and I was like, this is cool. So then I bought the Game Boy Color, the Dragon Warrior 1 and 2, so I played through 2 on that, and I played through 3 after that on Game Boy Color, and we talked about that on one of our Patreons as well.
Yeah.
And then I did, like, all the DS stuff. They were pretty cheap, so you could still get them. So I got Dragon Quest 4 on DS, I got 5 on DS, I played through all those.
Not anymore.
And then I played well, when I got them, I don't know how, I mean, it was a long time ago. They were pretty cheap. You could still buy them for like regular price. I got them new too. They were sealed. But so I played through those and then the 3DS ones, and I got the Dragon Quest 7, Dragon Quest 8. And I actually had 9 as well. 9 was one of the first ones that I played when I was trying to get around to it. And I was like, this is cool, but I want to go all the way back to the beginning. And then after I beat like Dragon Quest, you know, 4, 5, 7, 8, when I went back to 9, I had no idea where the fuck I was supposed to go. Like, I was so confused. I was like, what do you do now? So I never beat 9. But, yeah, I really liked it. But, yeah, no, it's just, I mean, aside from, you know, Dragon Quest, you know, I will forever fight for Dragon Quest over Final Fantasy. I think that Dragon Quest is a better series than Final Fantasy. I think there's more good Dragon Quest games than there are Final Fantasy games. And also, don't forget that Dragon Quest was the first console RPG, not Final Fantasy. Dragon Quest was, and Dragon Quest 3 was the first console RPG to introduce jobs and job systems and all that. So people forget about all this because it wasn't released until later in America, but Dragon Quest did it all before Final Fantasy did. So yeah, losing Akira Toriyama,
I mean, Dragon Quest directly influenced Final Fantasy.
Well, yeah, no, I'm saying Dragon Quest was the first console RPG. 100%. It came out way, way earlier than Final Fantasy One did. So, and also they were the first ones to bring jobs into the system as well. So they did a lot before Final Fantasy did. But people remember seven or whatever.
I feel Toriyama was really young, and yeah, I don't know. It's sad. It is definitely a irreplaceable.
Yeah, he was like he was 68. He had like a brain tumor, which is like fuck, so young.
I would say it's similar to, like, also to me, it feels similar to when Iwata died. I mean, it's not quite the same, but it's like,
yeah, he was young too.
Somebody who's just so,
so talented,
omnipresent in a lot of the media I love. Yeah. It's like, wow, he's gone. He's like really gone. Like, and like thinking of like, I don't even know, Dragon Quest 11 or Dragon Quest 12. They're maybe thinking about changing up the formula and getting a little darker with it. Like, was he done with his character design? Who knows?
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't really. I mean, it's like, I think Axelblood God said this. It's like when Kevin Conroy died, like the voice of Batman, but we still hear him. Like, he's still in Suicide Squad. Like, he still was on a bunch of stuff later. So I don't know. Who knows how much. I'm sure Akira Toriyama was still involved in 12 and also, like, the Dragon Quest 3 remaster. That we still haven't seen yet. Yeah, I'm sure he was still involved with that to a point. But yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. It's going to be weird. I mean, it's going to be weird when 12 comes out, but it's also going to be even weirder when 3 comes out because he was such a huge part of 3 when it originally started and all that. So I don't know. Yeah, I was working. I found out about it, and then I had like this fucking 15-hour day where I was like running around recording all this shit. And like, it was just kind of crazy. Like, I was just trying to wrap my brain around it. But yeah, and I text Jess about it, and then they were like, yeah, Akira Toriyama, I've heard that name like a million times on your podcast, you know. And then I posted the sprites and all that, and Jess was like, yeah, there's the golem that I did the cross stitch of and all that. And I was like, yeah, I always, those monster designs were always fucking impeccable. They were so good. They had so much personality. What's up?
So Dragon Ball Z is super popular in like Latin America. And I have, you know, I work with a lot. I mean, it was popular everywhere, but
I would say it's popular in a lot of places. I mean, it's very
popular. I work with a lot of Mexican folks. And when I went into work, like we ended up talking about it a lot. Like people were really upset about passing away.
Yeah.
And I even like made a joke because one of our, you know, one of my coworkers had called in. I was like, do you think they called in because Toriyama died? And like they were like, my coworkers were getting a huge kick out of that. But like one of my coworkers came up to me a little bit later. One of my Mexican coworkers was like, hey, you need to check out this video. And it was just like, obviously, it was like a comedy video, but it was like all cartels in Mexico agree to a ceasefire in honor of Akira Toriyama.
Yeah.
Well, there was just all this stuff. Like it wasn't real, but it was like the impact was real. Like they had like he also showed me like a soccer game where they like had a huge like display of like Goku or something, you know, and like dedicated to Toriyama and like. No, there's, I think, obviously, we're talking about it on our podcast, and we're seeing it in our media and stuff, but there's parts of the world where, like, they're really feeling this on a visceral level. Like, yeah, this guy, it's really hard to understate how important Mr. Toriyama was to art and to just, I don't know, to a lot of people and how they perceive fictional media.
Yeah.
Just... Yeah. As such an important person, and just gone in a flash.
Yeah, it's almost
because we're all just humans in the end, right?
Yeah.
We're all just humans.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that too. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was almost like, I don't know, it was almost like, I mean, yeah, it was totally like losing Iwata, which Iwata died at 55, which even younger. But I don't know, it was almost like losing like...
Oh, much younger.
I mean, yeah, it was almost like losing... Miyamoto or something like that, which we haven't, but you know, like, I don't know. Yeah. Toriyama was, and I have an art book that I bought with a bunch of his art in, and you know, that I bought from Mitsuo, which is a Japanese grocery store that we went to actually last week. But it was like,
maybe another good analog just, like, would so be like when Jim Henson died, I remember. Cause like when Jim Henson died, they like had his characters honoring him posthumously and stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of like how I feel about what's going on with Toriyama, because just has a whole style, just has a whole, everything that he's done, you know, he's got a wide variety of work, but it's all distinctively his stuff. It's going to be strange. I just don't know anybody who's as prevalent in animation other than like Disney and like obviously like Warner Brothers, like Mel Blanc and stuff. Like, I'm thinking more, those are more like voices, but like the different eras of like Warner Bros. Animation, it was still like a bunch of different people. It wasn't just like one guy. Mm-hmm. Whereas Toriyama was like 40 years of one guy.
Yeah.
Having such a huge impact on everything animated and manga and video gaming. It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, it was rough. I mean, it's, yeah. Still rough to think about it because, yeah, made me want to. I haven't had a chance to because I've been too busy, but it made me want to get back to Dragon Quest Monsters because I'm like, oh, yeah, all this design here, you know, just to toast him and all that. But, you know, it's a incredible design. And even like, Chrono Trigger is the big one that people remember because it was when, you know, Squaresoft and Enix like came together and did like Dragon Quest plus Final Fantasy and all that. But don't forget that like before and after that, like Dragon Quest V was an incredible game that was made around that time that didn't come out here because it was only in Japan for whatever reason. A lot of people
consider it looks similar though, like
yeah, the art. Well, I think the main one is Dragon Quest VI. Like if you play Dragon Quest VI on the Super Famicom, it very much looks like the style of Chrono Trigger, and even like even VII is kind of a little bit in this and still in kind of the Chrono Trigger world. Because VII has like, you know, where you go through time and you kind of rebuild the world. Like, I know people talk shit about VII, but Dragon Quest VII is still one of my favorites. Like, well, I played the 3DS version of it, but I fucking loved it. I thought it was done really, really well. I put like 130 hours into it or something like that on 3DS, but I beat it. but it was, and it also it had all the jobs and all that in there as well. But I would love to, I've said it before, I would love to play Dragon Quest VI, but I would love to play it in the style of the Super Famicom game with the translation, with the localization of the DS version. Because the DS version, unfortunately, was using the same art style that 4 and 5 had, but it looks so much better if you use the original Super Famicom art that Toriyama did. But there is no version to get that. So basically, you have to get a modded version. And I played a ROM of it, you know, where it was not the actual translation from, like, Square Enix. But I would love to have the translation of the DS one mixed with the Super Famicom one. Because the Super Famicom one looks really, really good. But yeah, cheers, Toriyama. You did such amazing fucking things. Like I said, just look at that fucking slime. Like, you can just see, like, that slime is immortal. That slime, we will see that slime everywhere. It's just like, I don't know. It's like, here, could you do this? I mean, just that one thing where it's like, here's like the...
I would say it's like a smiley face.
Here's the D&D slime. What can you make of this? And he throws you back this slime with a face on it. And it's like, it's an instant classic, you know, like, just, and that became the mascot for Dragon Quest. You will see that slime everywhere. It's even in fucking Fortune Street, like in the, or Itagaki Street, like the, you know, like the Mario Party esque game and all that. Like, it's, yeah. And I have like 6 slimes at home. You know, we bought a bunch in Japan. They were everywhere. You know, it's like, His art is all over the place. So, and I always loved those monster designs so much. And I remember, like, even some of the Super Nintendo ones, depending on how you defeat them, they would have different animations, like how they fell down. And it's just like, you can totally fall in a rabbit hole of, like, all the cool shit that he did. But yeah, this one goes to you, Toriyama. Yeah, fuck. Yeah, really, like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it and all that. So, let's see, do I have anything else to say? Jess and I went to a mall because we were waiting for one of our cars to get fixed. So we ended up in a mall in a Chicago suburb. And, what was it? We went to some tabletop gaming place. I looked around at like puzzles and shit like that. But I ended up at a GameStop and they had a used PS5 there. I don't think I've actually stood next to one before. Oh my God, it's fucking gigantic. It looks like it was like half of my body. I was like, I don't know how you fit it in your house.
They're giant. Yeah.
It's so big.
They're much smaller now. The new model.
They're slims. It was the old one. It's the first one I saw one opened and I was like, oh my God, it's so big.
Yeah, it does not fit into any conventional gaming setup. Like, mine's behind my television hiding. Because there's nowhere else for it to go.
I mean,
it would need its own stand.
Yeah. I mean, we both got 65-inch TVs, but I was like, I think even if I put it behind mine, it still might peek out a little bit. It seemed really big. I don't know. I'd never seen an opened one.
It's not that big, but it won't fit in your. I've seen your setup. It won't fit underneath anything.
Well, I would have to put it behind the TV, but I wouldn't get. I'm not going to get one until I find out what the Switch 2 is about. But let's see. So while I was on my sound recording adventure, I've been to 2 arcade bars in 2 days. So yesterday we were in Quincy, Illinois, which I've never been to, even though I've lived in Illinois for however long. Quincy is, like, you know, down towards the bottom, kind of close to St. Louis, I think, like 2 hours from St. Louis. Anyway, Quincy is a weird, like, super old school.
I say I'm like town. 2 hours from St. Louis.
Well, I mean, you know, give or take, a lot of things are 2 hours from St. Louis, depending where you're at.
Yeah.
But Quincy was very south. I had to take some very, very back roads on the way there, which sucked. But basically, first day at Quincy, I was like, all right, let's see if we can find any sort of retro game places or whatever. So I just searched games on my Google app or whatever. And it brought up this arcade bar called Games and Grains. And I was like, oh, cool, there's an arcade bar. Let's go there. So last night we went there, and it was pretty sad. But it has potential. It was a big area. They had like 4 arcade games. Because the website kind of lies to you. And it's like, we got all these systems. We got all these games. But they don't name any of them. And then you get there, and it's like, yeah. All right, we got Austin Powers Pinball. I played that. We got Cruising the World, which I did play that a couple times. And then we have like, I think it's like Donkey Kong and Galaga or something like that. Like one of those older ones. There's like two other ones. And then there's like a ping pong table and billiards table. And then there's a tube TV with a 64 attached to it. And you can trade in 64 cartridges to the bar, but you can only have like one at a time. Cause they had Mario Kart 64 there. So we played a little bit of that. I was like, what else do you have? And it's like, well, we got GoldenEye and Mario Party. And I was like, which Mario Party? They're like, we got Mario Party 1. I was like, that's a rough one. I don't wanna ask anybody to deal with that. It's a very tough game to play. But yeah, I felt kind of bad because I was trying to push everybody to go to the arcade bar, and then we went there, and it was kind of sad when we got there, but. But we moved to South Bend, and we went to this arcade bar called the Garage Arcade. And when we showed up there, it ended up being, it's an arcade bar, but it's also a karaoke bar. So I was like,
oh sweet.
So I was like, oh shit, let's go. So I did my patented, I did my performance of Too Drunk,
Too
to,
drunk
fuck.
To Fuck.
I did my Dead Kennedys performance, and it was great. I got a lot of applause for it, even some people I didn't know. So they liked it. And the karaoke DJ guy told me about how he played it at an early Riot Fest before it was outdoors at the Double Door. He said he saw Jell Biafra in the crowd for his show at the Double Door during Riot Fest. And I was like, that's badass. And I was like, you know what? I met Jell Biafra once. I saw his DJ set at Liars Club a few years ago. But yeah, no, it was cool. I talked to him. I did my Dead Kennedys thing, and it was great. Mm-hmm. But they had a lot of it was all free to play games. I played Mortal Kombat 2. We played some of the trackball golf game. We played some of that. The thing that was crazy was they had a Street Fighter 2 arcade game, and I played some of Street Fighter 2, but they modded the fuck out of it. So like if you do a spinning like a tornado kick, like a spinning kick, it basically goes all the way across the screen like really, really fast. And you could do Hadoukens from the air, but they go down. Like, you'll stop, like, in the air and do the Hadouken. Like, they obviously modded it because it was doing shit that I had never seen before. Like, the movement on the tornado kick was, like, crazy. I was like, this is fucking
Vortex
weird.
Onderuga.
And I told one of the producers was like, I want to try out the Street Fighter game. I was like, you should try it out. I was like, I think they modded the fuck out of it because it's really weird. And she was like, yeah, I was trying to do Chun-Li, and it was crazy. I was like, I was like, I did the tornado kick, went all the way across the thing, like, super fast. So, yeah, it was weird. But, no, it was cool. I sung that song and had a couple drinks, and I signed up for another one, but they didn't do it quick enough because I wanted to come here and record this podcast for all of you. So there you go.
I've got a great video of you performing that song in 2019.
Yeah, I wanted to do...
Alice's.
I wanted to do... No One Lives Forever, because I was actually listening to that in the car on the way here. I had a fun music 6 hours that started off with the Crow soundtrack from talking to John on Slack. And wow. I went from there. It was all inspired by that. It was a good playlist. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. Do you need a break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break to feed this. Hey, you.
It's me, Mario.
Yeah, you. Subscribe to our Patreon to hear our bonus shows, which happen every month.
I'm tired.
Tired of all the big corporate podcasts spoon-feeding you the same old video game news on every single show.
Ah, spaghetti. ravioli.
Then expand!
With Nintendo Main Expansion Pack.
It's us talking about old games that were important to us. It's us interviewing people that we meet at conventions. And heck, it's live shows from those same conventions. It's basically everything you could want that Nintendo Main ever made.
Here we go!
And it's just $1 a month.
That's less than a bad indie on the eShop.
It's $12 a year, which is less than Nintendo Switch Online.
Thank you so much for subscribing to our Patreon and supporting Nintendo Domain.
Just go to patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast and... Hey, Mario, let go!
Whoa. Whoa.
He's throwing us back to the show!
So long, Bowser!
Patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast!
Game over!
There is a, all right, we're back from the break. There is like one thing that I mentioned yet, which I need to mention. So since we're recording this later than we normally would, the big game for me this week was a Star Wars Battlefront Collection, Classic Collection, whatever it's called, came out on Thursday. And I guess I watched some reviews of it. The reviews were pretty high, even though they missed out on some things. And I'm kind of disappointed that my boys at Switch Up missed out on this. The big thing for me, actually put it on Twitter. I think I have like 300 looks or something like that for it. Something like that. Yeah, like 350. Anyway, so Star Wars Battlefront Collection does not have, you cannot invert the y-axis. So old people like me and old people like the people who played this game can't play the game like it originally was with an inverted y-axis. You know, where you hit down to look up and you hit up to look down. That's how I play first-person shooters. And
say yoke control, as they would say.
Yeah, I kind of had a moment about this. I sort of, you know, sometimes I have little moments where I kind of predict the future and then I don't know about it until later. So when I was packing my bags for this job, I was like, I threw my 8-bit dough in there, the gray one, not the 2.0, and I was like, well, don't you want to throw the 2.0 in there? I was like, you know what? It's going to be all right. Battlefront, it's done by Aspyr. You know, they're cool. They're not going to fuck you over again like they did before, like they fucked me over with Jedi Outcast. What they did. So I played a little bit of it, but you can't do... I haven't even played the space battles yet because the space battles were always like, you know, flight controls. So that's going to be even more confusing because the space battles was the other stick, was the left stick and not the right stick where you have to flip them. So, yeah. But aside from that, I saw a lot of people being really upset because apparently the online kind of sucks. And there's only like three online rooms between like all the systems. So everybody got like locked out when they tried to play it today or something. Mm-hmm. There's been a whole bunch of discourse online already about it, about the online. For me, I just want to play the single player again. I've only played two. I really love Battlefront 2. The single player was awesome. Like I said before, you get to play through the Rise of the Empire. You get to kill all those fucking Jedi kids as Anakin. It's great. But also, I've never played Battlefront 1. In Battlefront 1, you get to kill Jar Jar and all his friends. You start out in the fucking fight from Episode 1, so you can kill all those Gungans and that sort of thing. So I just want to play the game, but I can't play it with the, I can't do it if it's not inverted. So I was disappointed about that. And it's weird because they added a bunch of extra stuff. There's like a colorblind mode where you can change like that. You can put in sepia tone or whatever, which I guess would help you. But you can't like flip the fucking y-axis. But anyway, I tagged Aspyr Media and I was like, hey, you fucked up, and I'm going to tell everybody right now that you cannot flip the y-axis. No gyroscopic aiming either, which sucks. But y-axis, like,
Why would you not do that? Like, when you have all this extra
especially
shit in
since
there.
I don't think it's, it can't be that complicated of a feature to add.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's like everything. I mean, like I said, this reminds me of when Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast came out on Switch and it didn't have it. And I was like, this is like the game I was looking forward to and it wasn't there. And I got a bunch of shit at the NVC podcast forum or whatever. You're like, oh, well, you play it wrong. It's like, well, fuck you. No, I want to play it the same way that I played it before. So you know what I did? I went back and I played the GameCube version and I streamed it. And I was like, you know what? Fuck you, Switch version. I'm playing it on GameCube, which is the original version that I played it on. And that's what I'm going to do. But it's like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, the people that you want to buy this again are the people that played it originally on PlayStation 2. And on PlayStation 2, the inverted version was the default. So it's like when they put out fucking Mario Sunshine and they took that out and wouldn't let you change it. Like, Mario Sunshine was inverted also when it came out on GameCube. And then when it came out on Switch, they flipped it. And it's like, what are you doing? The people who played it, they play it this way, and you're not letting them do that. So fuck off. I don't know. There's my TED talk on inverting Y-axis. Just let us play it. Just let us use it that way. Come on, please. I'm your people here. I'm the person that buys your fucking games. Like, let me invert the Y-axis. So it's like, seriously. Like, I'm the demographic.
It's a gaming
I am the first person shooter person that wants this. Just let me play it right. You know, I was very excited.
Anybody
to
that's ever played a flight sim knows up is down and down is up. Like, just from the get go, you like in gaming, that's been a thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Like I said,
I just find it to be like an egregious thing to overlook. Like, really? Come on. There's got to be a list that somebody made of let's get these features in here. Do we really have to have it be an add-on to invert the controls?
Right? Like I even did a video on Twitter just showing, like, there's like a streamer mode. I don't even know what that means. What, you cut out the Star Wars songs, but you can't invert the Y-axis? And I haven't even gotten into any of the vehicles yet, but I feel like it's going to be even more confusing once you get into like spaceships and like different vehicles or whatever, because there's different, because you can change the sensitivity, like the aiming sensitivity on all the different vehicles, but you can't like just invert the Y-axis. Like, I don't know. It just seems, I'm like, what are these, a bunch of kids that just like don't remember when we used to do like inverted Y-axis? I don't know.
Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah, right? I mean, I felt like that was the same conversation on Jedi Knight 2, where it's like, nobody plays that. I was like, but this game... But it, when the game came out, they did. Like, what? Come on, you're trying to cater to like us old people that like played this when it came out. And we want to buy it again. Like, make it the same way it was. Like, come on. So yeah, that made me sad. But I'll be home tomorrow, so I can play with my 8-bit Doe 2.0 and fucking flip the Y-axis on my own. But still, what the fuck? What the fuck, Aspyre Media? That's what I said on my Twitter post. What the fuck? Fix it.
What the fuck, Aspyre?
Fix this shit.
Aspyre to more.
Yeah, exactly. Aspyre to making your games better. And apparently the online sucks too. I haven't tried that. I just tried playing the single player, but apparently the online sucks.
I mean, I don't find that hard to believe.
Yeah. But that's a shame. That's a shame because the game was fun as fuck when it came out. Like, they really should make the online better. I mean, well, I haven't tried it. Next week, I'll let everybody know about it. But apparently everybody's mad about the online more than anything else. So, yeah. It's a shame. It's a really good game. I mean, two is. I haven't played one, but loved two on PS2. So yeah, you can go now. Sorry, I need to rant about Star Wars Battlefront.
That's okay, because I actually don't have a lot to talk about myself. I've also been very busy this week and prepping for a big trip next week. I'll talk about it a bit more next episode. But yeah, going on a huge real life Minecraft style trip. It's gonna be fun. I'm probably gonna miss a couple weeks. Sorry, listeners. I know you love me. But,
yeah, well, it's going to be...
Sometimes you got to self-care.
I'm already trying to figure it out, how me and John can do it. Maybe we'll record in the daytime.
That's what I did when you were gone. But it's also possible... I would plan on me not being able to be in it, but
maybe
it's possible I'll figure something out.
Maybe you can call in with your cell phone or something.
Right, right.
I mean, I
wouldn't plan on it.
I wasn't...
It's a possibility.
I wasn't expecting you to.
If nothing else, maybe I could do like a little recorded vignette that you could splice in. But it's in case anything major happens. But yeah, it's been a fairly busy week, and you know, that's good. But the thing I put most of my time into this week was that Resident Evil 4 remake, which I talked about a lot last week. So, you know, we don't have to get too much into it.
You love it.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. It's fantastic.
I thought you would love it. I was surprised you didn't get it when it came out.
Well, I didn't get it when it came out because, yeah. Because
it was $70 I mean, Capcom, they have.
I think it was 40.
They haven't gone to the, no, it was 60 when it came out. Like, well, when it on the day, but Capcom hasn't gone all the way up to 70 because I know I bought a, what was it? I bought Street Fighter 6 and that was 60. And I end up, yeah, on the day Resident Evil 4 remake was 60, but you bought it for like 30 or something like that.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, I got it for 30. And I mean, I just can't recommend it enough. It does inspire me to want to finally play through Village because I know Villages has a similar thing.
I love Village. Village was so much fun.
Bust your ass through that game over and over again.
And I played I played Village on Cloud. I played Village Cloud. Yeah. But I had a blast with that game. It was a shit ton of fun. It's stupid, but it's a lot of fun. And I played it in third person also. I got the DLC so I could play it not in first person. Well, I wanted to play the after DLC stuff with the kid, which was really good. But yeah, no, Village was like amazing.
Ethan Winter's child. Yeah, I think, you know, I've listened to a bunch of stuff about it since it came out, but like, I think it was just, as far as the remakes go, you know, everybody's going to have their feelings about what the best one is. But for me, it's this one because Resident Evil 4 is just one of my favorite action games of all time. Super influential. Whether you like it or not, for good or bad, it really did influence like what games were like for quite a while there. Like I would say, like what's that game everybody was obsessed with? Gears of War. I would say Gears of War would have happened if it wasn't for Resident Evil 4.
Oh sure,
like just that third person perspective like shooter, and it's still happening even now with like you know, like these squad shooters and stuff where they're all third person, but Fortnite is a great example. But I don't know. This is good. It's I can't say a whole lot without spoiling anything other than just to say, like I said last week, it's like you're playing Resident Evil 4 for the first time again, but it's familiar at the same time. You know, I don't know if I said it last week, but a great example would be A Link Between Worlds. Playing that and it feeling like A Link to the Past, that's what this is like more than anything. Like, it definitely, the previous thing definitely informs, you know, how this game works, but it just keeps perpetually surprising you, and you don't get what you expect, even though ultimately when you're done with the game, you feel like you played just a more modern version of the original game. So yeah, what's to say beyond that? It's a great game. I've essentially gotten myself down to where I've just got a pistol and a magnum. That's all I use. You know, I'm on my second playthrough. I guess I should mention that I beat it. I'm on my second playthrough, and I'm just like having so much fun going through OP as fuck and knowing what I'm doing and the puzzles and stuff and playing through it again.
What do you get? Like, what sort of upgrades do you get? Like on the second playthrough from beating it once.
It's the same.
Well, I mean,
you get new costumes and you can get the Chicago typewriter and you can get the, and then you can carry your stuff over like New Game Plus style.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was it? I mean, Village,
Infinite rocket launcher is 2 million gold.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saving up for that.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's basically how Village is too. Yeah. Where it's basically like, you have to do specific things. So they have achievements, but they're achievements that mean something. So like you do a thing and then you can get like unlimited shotgun ammo or unlimited pistol.
Oh yeah,
or
that's
whatever.
Not in this game.
It's not in this game?
No, you're not going to get unlimited ammo. It's just like the original Resident Evil 4 where you're just like...
Yeah, but on your second playthrough, you can't get unlimited ammo for different things?
The only unlimited ammo is... contextually, sometimes they'll give you unlimited ammo. Think about the boat when you're like fighting the lake monster, or
but not on the second way through. Because
they actually give you unlimited pistol ammo during a segment later on the game. I won't say when, but No, like that's not, as far as I know, that's not upgrade. It's just the unlimited rocket launcher. There's the Chicago typewriter, and then like you basically just carry everything over with you. So
I mean, will you carry everything over? Like all, got, like all the guns you bought or whatever. Plus.
Yeah. So like,
or your upgrades, and like that sort of thing.
Yeah, all your upgrades. So, and I don't know about keys and stuff because this game actually will let you sell like key items when you don't need them anymore.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do that in Village also. I was just,
which I did, but I don't know if those key items carry over if you don't sell them. Like maybe you could skip huge sections of the game because you have the key already. I don't know, but all I know is it's the same sort of merchant economy where I basically sold all my weapons except for my Magnum and my pistol that I like, and they're maxed out, and I don't need nothing else. I can get through the game with those two things and have a great time. Yeah. Also, like the knife changed a little bit, but I do have like a really nice knife because you earn that by beating Krauser the first playthrough.
According to Game Facts, you get unlimited ammo for the Chicago typewriter and the hand cannon in Resident Evil 4. I know you said you got the typewriter. Well, the typewriter is like the Dick Tracy gun, whatever you call it, the Tommy gun, right?
It's a Tommy gun. It's just another name for a Tommy gun.
Well, I was just curious. Well, I mean, because Village came out before that, and what I thought, what intrigued me about Village and why I kept playing it was like, it's like, all right, well, shoot this amount of people in the head with a pistol, and then you get unlimited pistol ammo, or do this thing with shotgun, and then you get unlimited shotgun ammo, and you like it. It has like these achievements that you do, but they actually mean something because they actually work into like. And it's like, what if you like knife this amount of people, you get a fucking lightsaber, you get the fucking Darth Maul lightsaber in Village. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's like, that's what I thought was really cool. That's what you played over and over and over again. And I figured
I'm going to go back to that game. I think
I figured since Resident Evil 4 was after that, that they would do a similar thing where it's like, all right, do this, but do this, and then we'll give you this. And then you try to, and then it all kind of like, you know, all kind of culminates together. And it's like, all right, well, now I have an unlimited amount of shotgun ammo, so maybe I can beat the game shorter, and then I'll get this extra achievement that will give me another thing, and then you can,
yeah,
you know, if you only want to play Resident Evil Village, you could play it a whole bunch of times and have a lot of fun with it, you know.
Well, that's the way this is, and that's not even including like mercenaries or separate ways, but.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, have you played the Journey version yet? Well, I guess that's extra DLC, right? The separate ways stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I just finished the game last night, and like I said, immediately started playing the New Game Plus stuff because I knew the whole time that's all I really cared about. And last time I talked about playing through Resident Evil 4 on the Switch a couple years ago, like I did the same thing where I played through it like 3 or 4 times in a row just because that's just how the game, it lends itself to like, you just have more fun the more powerful you get. And you learn the stuff, and I just got this whole game. You know, the original Resident Evil 4, like, pretty much, like, I could play it in my brain almost, like, just thinking about it. But the remake changes things up so much that it's making me doubt the original memory. You know, like, it's just that good of a game. So I highly recommend it. I think you should play, Trey, you in particular, would love it. When you get a chance, get it.
I'll play it at some point. Well, I mean, we'll see what Switch 2 is. I figured I'd get it on Switch 2 if it was on there. I mean, there's plenty. You know, I never played through Resident Evil 2 remake.
Anybody who has like the newest version of iPhone,
I didn't play through
6.
Or no, fuck 6. I never played through 7, even though I do have it on PS4. I'm just saying, there's plenty.
I thought you played through 7.
Played through 8.
I remember you saying
8 is Village.
I thought I remembered you playing through 7, like
Resident Evil. No, I have it, but I've never touched.
Because that's like that was kind of where they restarted the Biohazard.
Yeah, that was when they restarted it. Well, because they had to, because 6 was awful, from what I heard. I've never played it, but I mean, I played
5 was really bad.
I played 5 and I hated 5 too. So, but apparently 5 was apparently 6 is really bad too.
Incredibly, I don't know how they're going to redo 5. I would be interested if,
well.
They might change up races and stuff a little bit in that game, because that game does not age well.
But you do actually, I mean, well, aside from, yes, it was incredibly racist. Aside from that, I do think Resident Evil 5 was also bad because of the popularity of Resident Evil 4. So, like, they basically kept the same shitty controls between the two games, and it just didn't work. They basically wanted Resident Evil 5 to be Uncharted, but it doesn't have actual third-person shooter controls because you can't move and aim at the same time.
Which, and it was also forced co-op.
Well, forced co-op as well, but yes, Resident Evil 4 was cool, but the only reason it was cool was because they stuck the camera behind the character when you aim, but you still can't move and shoot. It's still not a third-person shooter. It's still...
I mean, there's a lot of reasons it was cool, but yes.
But it's still the tank controls that you
had
in
the original...
It's
still tank,
it's
just from a different perspective, yeah.
Yes, the different perspective, and yes, they made it a little more action, but then in 5, they went from that, and they made it too much action, but still didn't change the controls, so we still had these... Yes, Resident Evil 4 has bad controls. The original Resident Evil 4 does not have does not have good controls, is what I'm trying to say.
I agree.
I mean, the remake, yes, they fixed it finally, but 4, bad controls. It's really hard to go back to.
And, I know when I went back to it.
Yeah. It's not good. And that
another way. Reason why the 4 remake is great is because it does have tilt controls. So, like, for those headshots, I'm telling you, when you're fighting that, when you're fighting those regenerator guys, whatever they call them, like the motion aiming is great.
I didn't know they had a gyroscopic aiming, but that's good.
Yes, and I just have it set to where it only does it when I'm like zooming in, you know, like as like precision stuff.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, for sure. But no, I do want to play the remake. I'll play it when at some point. I got a lot of shit to play, so I'll get to it at some point.
It's just good, clean fun. You know, it's just it's Resident Evil 4 all over again, and you're just going to love it. If you love the original game, you'll love this one. I can't say enough good about it. Use your headphones while you play it. You get some really cool environmental like sounds and stuff, especially with the guys. Like, if you're in a building, you can hear them like walking around above you, moving towards you and stuff. It just adds a lot more to the game. And you know, initially it was scarier to hear all that extra stuff, but then eventually it's like, oh, the game's easier now because I know they're coming. You know, like
I did hear that the gunshots are woke now. So I think I should probably not hear it, not see it.
What's woke?
the gunshots. No, I totally saw this, somebody being like, oh, the gunshots are woke now, just because they re-recorded the gunshots for Resident Evil 4 remake. And they're like, oh, they're woke now. I'm like...
Like the audio of them?
Yeah, they said the gunshots were woke. Well, because they wanted to change it. It's stupid. It's a total stupid thing. I was just, you know, trying to make a joke here. But yeah. Like, well, I heard the gunshots are woke. And also, you can't look up the whatever. Can't look up the skirt anymore, which is fine.
You cannot look up the skirt. I tried to see if there was like an Easter egg or something. Yeah, but you can't
be a total creep show anymore.
Well, it was always an accident anyway. You had to like go up the ladder. Like, if I wasn't, it happened on accident. I know that for a fact.
But they still kind of wanted you to. It was super pervy. Like,
well, no, they absolutely wanted you to. That's why
it was pervy. It was very
built into the game for a reason.
But yeah, they tried to make it less.
And then at the end, she's like, "Do you want some overtime?"
Yeah, but she doesn't do that in this one, right? She doesn't do like...
She doesn't. No, this time around,
they tried to make her less, like, you know, less horny.
I think it was the Watch Out for Fireball Boys that compared it to Agent Cooper and What's-Her-Face.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, there's obviously like some... Initially, they're expecting there to be like sexual tension, but she just wants to be a secret agent too, you know, like that's kind of the way...
Audrey.
That's kind of the way Ashley is in this, yeah. She's like Audrey more than... So there's still some flirty, weird stuff that happens from time to time, but it's mostly from...
I love that Twin Peaks episode where, like, she shows up, like, naked in his bed, and he's like, I can't. Like, he does... Like, yeah. Like, I mean, you know, Special Agent Cooper is like, you know, he's a G. Like, she does show up and tries to sleep with him, and he's like, what I want and what I can do are different. You know, he's that whole...
Yeah.
You know, he's... He does the right thing on that.
He's like, I came here for the coffee, not the pussy.
Yeah, and then he ends up sleeping with what's his face from
Log Lady.
No, she. Oh fuck, I had a good one, but I forgot his name.
Are you talking about Billy Zane?
Yeah. No, she ended up sleeping with Billy Zane in the second season. Was who she did sleep with It was Billy Zane's character who shows up. Audrey did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Ashley stuff is a little less cringy this time around, but I don't know. It doesn't really matter. I don't care that much, but I think they intentionally made it that way. So, you know, because like I said, Leon's never sexually aggressive towards her like he is in the original game, even with just comments. But I will say it's something that's really funny, because if you remember, like, Luis, like, was also hitting on Ashley all the time. Luis just hits on you. And I don't know if it's implied that Luis is, like, pansexual.
Yeah,
like,
the sort of the Johnny Depp looking guy. I heard he was different.
Like, he's literally like, I will give you this for a kiss on the cheek. He says that to Leon, like, about the antidote, you know, like, it's kind of funny because it's his creepiness is less creepy and it's more just like bromosexual or whatever you call it. Like, it's obviously like, I don't know if it's genuine or if he's just like, let's be funny. Let's have him just hit on Leon instead. You know, like, I think it works well. I like it. I like Luis a lot better as a result.
Yeah.
As a character, they flesh him out a lot more and he's not as creepy. So that's another thing to say for this game. They do, the characters get better representation, or, you know, better. Yeah. They just seem like more like characters and less like tropes for the most part. I don't know. Some of the enemies are still tropey, but who cares? They're enemies. You just kill them anyway. But anyway, yeah, it's a great game. And I have a feeling I'm going to be playing it for a bit because I have a tendency to get hooked on these new game plus scenarios. And especially in an action game like this, that you can go back to something that was originally terrifying and just mow the lawn. You know, like, I'm fine. I'm fine with doing that. I love it.
Just take everybody down.
I love it. That's pretty much it for me this week. Like, I played some Suika game on my phone, and I did actually see what happens with two watermelons, but I don't know if it's real.
I think that's a different game. I think the official
Suika, it is a different game.
I would say, I think the official, the one that we've been playing on Switch, I don't think that's on. I don't think it's actually on mobile. I think it's just all.
It's not.
It, like I said, it's like Flappy Bird again. Like, it's all just, you know.
Yep.
Just wannabes, because I think the official version is only on Switch. Well, it was only, like I said before, it was only on Switch in Japan last year, and then it came out.
I got the two watermelons in this version, but I feel like the playing field is wider and taller, so it's definitely not the same game, so it doesn't count. But I will say, in that game.
What happens in the mobile version when the two watermelons come together? Do they disappear?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. But I haven't looked.
I don't know if that's what happens in the real game, so that doesn't mean shit. That's just what happened in the mobile game. But I was playing it, like, I'll get off of work. No, they work days. I'll get off of work, and sometimes I'll sit and have a beer while I'm waiting for them to, like, do the tip out. And while I was doing it, I was playing, you know, whatever the bootleg version is on my phone. And I didn't expect to get to two watermelons, but I ended up, like, sitting there at the bar for half an hour playing this game, like, instead of going home from work. So it was kind of dumb. I was like, actually, I just got home.
So I think there is actually an official version, but it's $3 on iPhone. You have to pay $3 to get it, $2.99. This is the Suika game.
Aladdin X.
They're the ones who made the Switch version. So you can actually get the Switch version, but you got to pay $3 for it. It's not free.
Gotcha.
But it does exist. And it's 100%. I mean, it's 100% the same game. I mean, you probably can't see it, but that's
100%. Well, the circle of evolution is the same. That's the most important part.
I mean, you can't really see it, but look at the sprites. Like, it's 100%.
That's the circle of evolution.
That's the same Switch game.
Yeah,
right there. Aladdin X was the developer. So Suika game, Aladdin X, $3. You can get it on iPhone, which I don't want to do that because then all of a sudden your screen time will go up a lot. I am still
playing. I'm about to get a new iPhone. I think I might get one of the new ones that could play Resident Evil 4 remake.
You could, yeah, I would say you can play Village on your iPhone if you get one of the 15s, right? Because I think mine's a 14 or something. I've still been playing this week a game too, and I haven't done like I haven't gotten one watermelon, but I got really really close the other day. I got really close, and I thought I almost had it, but I didn't get it. And I was listening to our last podcast because I edited it, but I remember you talking about like sometime the fruit gets thrown up and goes past the line. Yeah. And that totally happened to me where I was like nowhere near it. And it's just one thing like, you know, one thing like got bigger and then it was just like, boom. And then it just went right up there. And it was like one little cherry
just
went right past the line. It's like done. And I was like, ah, fuck. But yeah, no, it's still a lot of fun. It's still a really good game. So it's a great, like I said,
initially I was like, this game seems janky, but yeah, the more I play it, the more I'm like, okay. I like that the rules are the rules, and I'm playing within those rules.
I like it because it's a really good podcast game. It's a really good editing game because there's no time limit to it.
Nope.
Like you can set the controller down and do your thing, and nothing happens. You know, it doesn't expect you to do a thing in a certain time, and those are the perfect like podcast editing games for me, where you can just like set the controller down, do your thing, you pick it back up, nothing's changed. You know, so it's been a good one. Same thing for Ease One. It's been a great podcast game where I just run around and just bump into people. Mm-hmm. But is there anything else you want to say on here on your shit? You want to talk about your Baldur's Gate 3 and how you haven't beat it yet?
No, I'll talk about it more next week, I think.
Yeah. So I don't know. Is there any? It's like John's really the news person, so I don't know. Most of the time,
I mean, we kind of covered Martin, and I think that was kind of the big thing.
Yeah, that was the main thing.
With those release dates and stuff.
Monster Hunter Stories 1 and 2, it's like coming out as a doubled up physical thing, which is kind of cool. It's funny because, well, it's a Capcom game, so it reminds me of the Resident Evil Revelations games. Where you get like one and then you get a download code for the other. It's the same thing where you get the one on there and you get two as a download code. But what I thought was kind of funny, and I was making a joke on Slack where I was like, well, Capcom also gave up on PS5. So Monster Hunter 2, which was a Switch exclusive, is coming to PlayStation, but it's only coming to PlayStation 4. But well, yeah, Monster Hunter Stories 2 is coming to PlayStation 4, but not 5, which I think was funny.
I mean, it is still coming to 5 if it's coming to 4.
Well, it was announced that it's coming to 4, but not 5. They said it wasn't coming to PlayStation.
They could have just said it was coming to 4 and 5, because you can download any PS4 game on your PS5.
I'm just saying that people, I mean, IGN posted it as Monster Hunter Stories fans are confused, because it said that it was going to PS4 and not 5. But I don't know. I'm sure you can.
I mean, it's a lot like Dragon Quest back in the DS era. Like,
yeah,
they're just trying to get the biggest install base. So.
Yeah, I thought it was weird too. Where it's like, why is it? It says specifically 4, not 5. But
that is strange because it could be like, you know, when Game Boy when like a DS game came out, but you could play it on 3DS as well, or a Wii game, you could play it on Wii U as well. Like, you could play any PS4 game on the PS5.
I thought it needed to have an upgrade or something.
Nope. The upgrades are available for certain games, but that's just taking advantage of the console. You can still just play the PS4 version if you'd rather do that.
Oh, is it like Wii U and Wii, where you can like go to Wii mode or something?
It's kind of hard to explain. Like, it's not hard to explain, actually. I don't know why I said that. It's not hard to explain. It's like you're just like paying for like the highest performance or whatever. Like, and oftentimes you're not even paying, you're just like download the PS5 version. A lot of the times it's actually a smaller file, which I've noticed if you download the PS5 version of stuff. So I think it's just like they've got an ecosystem, and PS5s and PS4s are still, most games are coming out for both still, even though they're saying the PS5s in its latter days or whatever. Like, most stuff that comes out for the PS5 is still playable on the PS4.
Yeah, it says that at the end of this article. It says it's still technically available for PS4. They just didn't announce it as that because it's not optimized for PS5, I guess.
Exactly.
That's the main thing. So I mean, I just thought it was kind of funny where it's like, okay. But yeah, I'm fine with ending it now if there's nothing else on here.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird week, but
it's been a crazy week.
We appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, there's new stuff, but from what I can tell, it's mostly like some controversy stuff that we kind of talked about last week. I think the big thing this week was just, you know, RIP to like one of the best, I mean, not just in gaming, but in all media, Toriyama. Like, huge loss, a huge loss. Otherwise, it's like, hey, Martende came and went, and it was disappointing. The end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they don't normally do anything for Marten, so, I mean, this one is bigger than the others, I guess, because they've never really...
I mean, it's like...
I mean, aside from, like, little sales, 10% sales or something like that. Like,
when people are making jokes about seeing Martin written on their milk for when it expired to today, like, that's the evolution of what happened. And I'm here for it, but as far as what they actually announced,
Mario Golf on Game Boy Color. Play that game. That's the best game out of all the ones they announced. Well,
I would agree.
From what
I haven't tried the tennis. Is tennis also an RPG, or is it like...
It is, yeah. It also has RPG stuff.
It's like Camelot as well, right?
Yeah. Supposedly tennis is really good. I just, I could never get into the tennis one as much as I did with the golf one. But apparently it's also as good. I mean, I played a little bit of Tennis Advance on Wii U, but yeah, it's not the same for me. I like the golf stuff. But yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, I think I'm good for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Nintendo Main Podcast, episode 413. And happy Marten to you. Belated, but happy Marten to you. And if you want to hear more stuff, go to patreon.com/Nintendo Main Podcast, and you can hear our bonus episodes for only a dollar. We just did an episode where we talked about... What was the last thing we talked about? I just edited it.
We were talking about games where you're very small.
Yeah, tiny games, where we play as tiny characters. And
that was a fun episode.
We do talk about Akira Toriyama, because we do talk about Rocket Slime in there. So, yeah, that was a fun one. A lot of good stuff in there. So you can check that out. And also, it's on the feed, but check out the Oscar episode that Jess and I did. If you want to hear us talk about who got the Oscars when they happened. But it's less. It's like 90 minutes shorter than the actual Oscars. Just listen to us have drinks and talk about all the movies we saw and all that. I thought it was a good one. We had fun with it. You can check all that out. And you can find us on Twitter, me at @Nintendo_domain, and at JMaxStack for Jeremy. You can find us. You can find Nintendo Main on Blue Sky as well. And youtube.com/Nintendo Main Podcast. You can find our videos and the wrestle chat stuff and all that. So, yeah.
Well, in the meantime, happy late Martende, RIP Toriyama, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, and we've been your hosts. I'm Trey Johnson.
I'm Jerry McCaskey.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
See you later.
It's fine. I'm just wearing a t-shirt. All right. I mean, I'm wearing pants too.
Nice.